It's the extra person we need to approve the minutes comes in.
So.
All right. So 7:05, on the roll call, Guillermo Arauz. Stacy Austin.
Here.
Erica Bacher.
Here.
Tina Barrett. David Bonner. Tim Bradhorst.
I'm here.
He's here.
Laurel Burkett. Mindy Creedy. Alexander DeSorbo-Quigg. Renee Duba-Clancy. Chuck Foster.
Here.
Cecilia Graham. John Grant.
Here.
Jessica Hartstorm. Andre Herman. Jerry Humbert. Jessica Iverson. Ken Johnson.
Here.
Kirk Johnson.
Here.
Chris Johnston. Stephanie Kane. Megan Cospitalo. Farzad Kalidan. Kirk Kent.
Here.
Brett Kreisman. Susan McElane. Rosie McAdams. Brian Murphy.
Yep.
Robert Navarro.
Here.
Nancy Nicholas. Sharon Oates.
Here.
Mary Jane Oliver. Christina Papernick. Teresa Peavy.
Here.
Lisa Petrov.
She's here.
Here.
Abigail Rogers. Richard Schumacher.
Here.
Cindy Shia.
Here.
Liz Simon. Dorota.
I'm here.
Good.
So we're still one shot.
Yeah, let's go one shot.
Okay, so we get another person, we'll do the approval of the group meeting minutes. Otherwise, before we start, I'd like to start with the land acknowledgement. So as we begin, we are mindful that we hold these meetings on land that is once and still inhabited by Indigenous people, including the Ojibwa, the Chippewa, Menominee, Potawatomi nations, and more. We will remember our nation's history and honor the Native people as stewards of this land that was colonized, and that we're, of course, continues to be a place many people from diverse backgrounds live and gather. Do we?
Yeah, are there any other public comments? Any public comments? You follow Robert's rule of the border last time. Any public comments? Great, seeing none.
Move into unfinished business?
Yeah.
Do we need a motion?
No, we can't do a motion because we don't have a quorum. So right now, everything is just
the meeting.
Just a gathering of great people.
Yes. Wonderful. So we'll go into our DEI education for the evening and have Rashida Graham Washington and that Lambshead Roach come up. Thank you so much again for gracing us with your presence. We'll move on into the audience.
Great. Thank you.
Hi everyone. Welcome back to you all. Good evening, everyone. Hopefully you learn. wanted to just draw your attention to the parking lot in the back. We have an hour together or so, and so in terms of like being mindful of all of our times and staying focused, if you have ideas that are part of what we're talking about, definitely it's appropriate to share, raise your hand, contribute. Like, this is a conversation for all of us. If you have thoughts that kind of arise and you want to make sure that they're addressed later, or something that our group might talk about another time, those are perfect for the parking lot. And folks online, you can do that as well. You can always email the DEI advisory group email with thoughts, parking lot thoughts, and you can also put them in the chat. Just label them as parking lot. We'll make sure that they go into the minutes. Is that right? All right, questions on that? There's a couple of markers back there. That sound all right?
All right. Well, let's get into it, because we only have an hour, and most of these topics could take a day within themselves. Today, we want to start with a conversation about an activity that engages us in the idea of when we're learning and what happens when we're learning. What is the context in which learning occurs? Okay, so we're going to get curious about what are the conditions and what are some of the elements or characteristics of a learning environment. So here's what I need from you right away. So I want you to think of something that you learned 10 years ago. Something that you learned 10 or more years ago that is still relevant and useful to your life today. Something you learned 10 or more years ago that is still practical, relevant, and useful to your life today. It could be a lesson, a moral, something that you live your life by. It can also be something tangible and practical, like learning how to ride a bike without training it, okay? So I want you to get the thing in your head. Here is the important part. Once you have it in your head, 10 or more years old, it can be something that you live by or some practical application that you still use today that you learned 10 or more years ago. I am less concerned about what the thing is, and you're going to be tempted to want to tell us that story. So I want you to suspend what the thing is. And now I want you to tell us, what are some of the characteristics, some of the context, some of the conditions in which you learned the thing, okay?
We got another marker.
What are some of the characteristics, some of the qualities of the environment or context or condition in which you learned the thing? Let's just take 1 minute and give some of those, think of maybe 3 elements. Some of the characteristics, qualities, conditions, or context in which you learned the thing. For those of you who have just come in, we want you to get something in your mind that you learned 10 or more years ago. It could be something you live by. It could also be something that you actually tangibly do, like learning how to ride a bike. It has to be more than 10 years old. And it has to be something you still utilize for learning. I'm less concerned about what the thing is. You're going to want to tell me what that is, but I'm less concerned about that. I'm more concerned about the context in which you learned the thing. So think of 3 qualities or elements, conditions that were present. How were you feeling? What was your state of mind? What was your state of being? What was the environment like? And let's just share a few of those qualities together. God's going to capture them for us. What were some of those elements? It could be something you were feeling, something you experienced.
Curiosity, ambition.
Boredom. Boredom. Yes.
Fear.
Fear.
And learned it unhappily and unwilling.
Unhappy and unwilling. And Bill, you would underscore that?
I would underscore that and fear, yes.
Underscore unhappy, unwilling, and fearful.
Oh, yeah.
Life or death situation or learn from a parent?
Mm-hmm.
Life or death situation or learn from a parent?
Learn from a parent?
Mm-hmm. A parent. Sorry. My father.
Parent. Oh. And it was life or death. It was life or death and learn from a parent. That's how I learned all my parents. It was all near death for me. Other qualities?
Frustration.
Frustration.
And the context was part of it was individual tutoring and part of it was group.
Huh. Some of it I learned on my own and some of it I learned in a group. So not necessarily one or the other, but maybe both. Yes.
Anxious and unprepared.
Anxious and unprepared.
Well, an experience of surprising joy.
Joy caught you off guard. Surprising joy. Mm-hmm. Any other?
Lisa just put up on there, I learned by doing.
Learned by doing. So active engagement or involvement. Mm-hmm.
So I said frustration when I was doing it, but happiness that I learned how to do it once it was done.
Fulfillment after learning. After the learning.
Mm-hmm. I had an exchange of ideas as part of it.
Collaboration or exchange with other participants. Yeah.
I learned from folks half my age.
Ah, so from maybe not who you would think of as your peers.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe not in that context. I mean, maybe not normal context, but in that context.
They were.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I would maybe name that as a diversity. Mm-hmm. Any other? Look at y'all list. Everybody see the list? Curiosity, ambition, boredom, fear, unhappiness, unwillingness, from family, life or death, frustration, a combination of individual learning and group learning, anxious, unprepared, surprising joy, fulfillment after the fact, by doing it, not necessarily planning it, but being in it, and exchange of ideas in a diverse space, sometimes with people who are not exactly like me. That's the list you made, right? All right. Now I want you to think about the context in which you want to learn. If I asked you, what is the optimal learning environment for you? What kinds of qualities or characteristics would you name? What do you need in order to feel like you could learn in a particular environment? What do you need to feel? What do you need to experience? What do you need in terms of resources?
Having a sense of security.
Security or safety?
Safety.
Safety and security for the next one. What else do you need to learn? Yes.
A diversity of thought.
Diversity of thought. Anything else?
Freedom from convention.
Unconventionality.
What do you want to say? I need other people.
So yeah. Other people.
I do. Yeah.
Collaboration.
On the board, it says an expert teaching me.
A thought leader or expert.
I just like what other people who are part of the group think. I learn a lot by listening to other people and thinking about what they said.
Active listening and reflection.
And then dialogue that comes with that.
Dialogue.
Practice.
Patience. Anything else? There might be two things in the chat.
We got them both started.
We got them? Yep. Okay, mm-hmm. Awesome. What do you need to feel? Yeah.
I would say challenged and interested.
Challenged, interested, engaged.
I'm going to stress security, safety.
_ safety and security. Yes.
Genuineness.
Yes.
Having a sense of support by a group.
A support system.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting as I'm listening that I think some of my most breakthrough learning has been when I'm uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. So look at the first list. Let's look at Dr. Musum side by side. Let's look at your first list. We're learning, we know from the first list that that's where learning actually occurred. Because I made you remember something you learned more than a decade ago that's still useful and relevant. So the things you learned that were most useful, memorable, and relevant happened in a space of discomfort, curiosity, boredom, fear, unhappiness, unwillingness, life or death, frustration, anxious, unprepared. You were not joyful nor fulfilled until the learning was finished. But what you really want or would name that you need is almost antithetical to the environment that you actually learned in. These young lists, y'all made them. So what are you going to do with what does this tell you? What can you derive from these two lists?
We want comfort, quickly need challenge.
Yeah. The things we want, the things that feel optimal for us to learn are not the actual environment in which learning actually takes place.
Expression of unexpected consequences.
Mm-hmm. That there's this opportunity to be caught off guard by what comes, the outcomes that come. And I want to make a distinction that I feel is very important, especially for people who are part of historically, intentionally, traditionally marginalized people groups. There's a difference between being uncomfortable and being traumatized, right? And often in some cases with MPGs, they have been traumatized and told that, well, you're just a little uncomfortable because you're learning. But really, that's trauma that's unfolding. But in predominantly dominant cultural groups, all the things on the what do I need list gets met to accommodate things like fragility. And then the learning opportunity is liquidated or minimized because we met this ideal list, not the actual list in which learning occurs. And if we come anywhere near here, we think we're being traumatized when really we're being made uncomfortable. So you will have to take an authentic, stock of your environment, your feelings, your interpretations of things, and get honest with yourself about the level of fragility that is leading to your interpretation of discomfort as trauma. And you will have to also be in touch with the things preemptively that really do trigger you and are traumatic, so that if you find yourself in that environment, it goes beyond discomfort and it really is traumatic. And for people who are not acculturated to gauging that, it has to be something you practice. Because if you don't, you will assume trauma when it's really discomfort, and or you might sit in something traumatic and tell yourself that you're just being made a little uncomfortable when really there's more than that going on. Okay. Oftentimes we also, and I don't know who is putting someone through school in any of the school districts in our environment, but I will ask you to get curious about this list for your students as well, because we often fight really hard for this list for our students when this is also the environment that they learn in. Think about kindergartners on the first day of school, just really for real. Like, I'm 5, and you pull up to the front of the school, and you open the door, and you let me out on this big block of cement where people are running and jumping and hopping and skipping, and a bunch of adults that I've arguably never met or rarely spent any time with, and you leave me there. And you know what we say? You're fine. No, you're fine. No, I'm 5. I don't know if I'm 5. And I'm crying, right? And you're like, you're fine. If you need anything, use your words. All I have are my words. That doesn't feel very powerful at 5. And we get in our cars and we drive away. And we come back hours later. Fast forward to being in your 30s and 40s and 50s in rooms like this, where we've seen people and been with people our whole lives, and we come in here and we're not fine. And nobody's running, and we're not really strangers. We at least know each other's names. We've been in these meetings together before. And we're sometimes less fine than the kids we expect to figure it out on their first day of school, where there's complete strangers that they don't know anybody there. We need more safety than they do to be in these conversations. And so I just want us to get curious about, if we're asking this of our students, if we're asking this of our kids, and then what are they building? Well, we tell them, it's okay, you're building resilience, right? And that we feel like they can do it in kindergarten, in fourth grade, in eighth grade, and ninth grade, it's like kindergarten again, or worse. And we send them and they're fine because they're building resilience. And what is the invitation for us in these roles, in these rooms, with all the socialization experience we've had, when we have proof in our lives based on the thing that we have in our heads from more than a decade ago that made this list, that this really does lead to enduring understanding? And that if the only time we're here is when we're forced to be here, it will minimize the opportunities we have for learning. But if we can subject ourselves to the discomfort that learning sometimes requires, it will maximize our opportunities to participate and transformational and enduring experiences. Any questions or comments about that? Wow. Somebody want to tell me what that thing was? What's your 10-year or older thing that you learned? Come on, Bill, what you got?
Playing the front trunk.
Yeah, that would take me on. I would still be trying to learn. Yes, playing an instrument. In my house, it just brought a lot of tears. Lots of crying. Anyone else?
It's computers. I never liked computers from day one, but continuing to learn.
And they continue to frustrate us every day. And the day you think you have them figured out is the day you forget to unmute, which is happening.
Right.
One more. What you got, Phil? I know you got something good.
Yeah, I got divorced.
Yeah.
And learning how to start all over again was a very fear-filled, uncomfortable, unhappy, and unwilling stage.
Yeah. So. And transformational. Yeah. We learned a lot about ourselves in those 10 spaces. Anyone else? All right. So I'll close and turn it over to Dot. But in the coffee shop, we used to have two hashtags that pretty much make you live there all the time. They sound exactly the same. One is two words and the other is three. The two word is live intention, meaning living purposefully, that I see this list and I'm choosing it. I know what I'm choosing to put myself in towards the opportunity to learn in a community, that I'm living intentionally, live intention. The second one is three words, live in tension, right? And it's in the tension where the learning occurs, where more than one thing could be true, where typically more than two things are true, and that we have to do the work of finding what's the third and fifth and seventh thing, that I think something's true, but I also hear something honest, if I'm being honest, and what you're saying. All of that is a part of that context for learning, and that's how we shape and form one another. So I hope that you will keep that with you as we continue our journey together, and I'll turn it over to Dot.
Thank you, Rashida.
Thank you.
I know, that is, yes. Yes, and I know that we have been at this, we've been working together coming up on a year, this group, and sometimes there are things that we're going to talk about, and then maybe a year later, it's appropriate to revisit and dig a little deeper. We have started to, you know, form a norm and get to know one another as we work forward. One thing I wanted to do quickly now, before I talk about the topic that's going to tee up next time, is the going over three terms that were introduced and that I'm sure that you did talk about in the past. But let's do this in small group spaces. And so I'm thinking maybe this group of folks and this group of folks and then the third group, if you want to get together in a small group. And then maybe the folks online can have a conversation. Maybe they can be our fourth group. Would that be all right? If they, maybe they could have this conversation over the chat with one another. All right. And the reason we're going to revisit these three terms, the three terms are prejudice, discrimination, and oppression. Are we familiar with these terms? All right. Yes, no? Well, then good. Let's go ahead and make sure we're really clear. As an advisory group to the Village of River Forest on diversity, equity, and inclusion, we want to be clear. We want to be solid on terms. When they jump off the paper and into our conversations and into our work, they come alive. And if we're not clear, then it's hard to work through them, right? So I just want to see in your small groups, we'll unpack it all together. We'll come back together. But why don't we spend 5 minutes in our small groups and see if you can, in your own words, talk about what these mean. They are three different words and they are connected. But in our small groups, let's take a moment. And at home, again, those words are prejudice, discrimination, and oppression.
Would it be easier if we stepped out so that they can actually unmute and talk with us, each other, rather than trying to do it by chat? I'm just kind of breakout.
Yeah.
Or breakout room. Yeah.
Yes, really. Folks online, thank you for attending tonight. It is meaningful that you are here, and you will be going into a breakout room to talk about what these mean. I don't know if you actually have the old terms, but see if the chat here is to just spend a moment and see if we can talk more colloquially about them, right? Like using our casual language, what is our understanding? We don't need to always use academic terms. What do these words mean? What do these words mean? Okay, go ahead. Turn to one another and see if you can find out what each of these mean. Revisit.
try to get you what we gave them?
You know, I actually started it out.
Okay. If you print it out,
you could be a discriminating consumer, So I don't think it does. like a lot of definitions.
It's push in
strong
That's when these really
we've been introduced to these terms and we've talked about them in the past, it was good to spend a few moments unpacking and harvesting and sharing our thoughts. So what did we come up with? Let's just go ahead and start with prejudice. What is it? I heard you all talking. You're on the right. Ken, go ahead. Ken.
So, did we all agree on that?
Yes.
we just broke it down to prejudgment. So, you know, without any background judging something or someone, without any forethought or experience or background before you even know it. Or it's something that they're
right. Based on a group that they are a part of, right? It's a specific prejudgment based on a group that they hold membership to, right? Before we even get to know them as a person, right? I heard other folks, well, what are some other, that's great. What are some other thoughts?
Well, we said a prejudice could be either positive or negative.
Okay, it is often used with like negative connotations and based on stereotypes. I heard a group talking about dominant narratives and how we've been socialized to kind of just think things about groups of people. But prejudging can also be giving people the benefit of the doubt based on a group that they hold membership to. Thank you for that.
In our group, we found that all three are the hardest to accept when they are being applied by somebody towards someone in relations between humans. that it's, if it's just in the terms of ideas or attitudes that somebody might have, if they are not put into action, they're neutral. Nothing can happen. But when you begin to experience the danger there is in having these feelings toward each other, is when you start applying them. Because you are given power to do something, or because you don't have any power to do
something. These are very intense terms. Right? Thank you for that. And we're going to get to power in a second when we move down the slopes, right?
Yeah.
I'm having difficulty with dictionary understanding of prejudice. Idea that it can be positive.
That's, well, what does the group think? I do have thoughts. What does the group think about this? And Rashida, you can also pop in here.
I think it's a bias. I mean, you could have a positive bias towards a person that may be unfair. Thanks.
And that, but that is the 101 definition of privilege, which can also have a negative connotation, right? So in its positive form, prejudice is privilege, right? In this benefit of the doubt kind of way, if I have an implicit bias that people who look and sound like me are smarter, even as positive as that sounds, if I then give them access to resources based on that unfounded prejudging, then that has a negative impact, though it sounds like a positive connotation. That makes sense? So it all just is, and probably shouldn't have a positive or negative connotation associated with it, because that's exactly how privilege is mobilized, by giving a positive connotation to my own prejudice. That makes sense.
And assumption is the these are rooted in assumption. Right? Assumptions are very, very powerful and very, very prevalent in these conversations. Right? Assumptions are where we are. Thank you. You want to hear the official term? These are some terms. Now, again, there are so many different definitions for the different terms. These work for our situation. So we're not, you know, we don't need to kind of go all over with different dictionary.com terms. But I do know that you were passed out, or if you don't have, please contact the leaders of the group to get the list. But I'll just go ahead and read it. It's a prejudgment or unjustifiable and usually negative attitude of one type of individual or groups towards another group and its members, right? They're often based on unsupported generalization and stereotypes. But I heard this group here talking about it's a bot. A prejudice is a thought. It's a preconceived notion, right? Discrimination. What did we come up with for discrimination?
It involves action. You sort of look at this as the stages or steps. There's, you know, there's prejudice, discrimination, and then oppression, which is somebody's crushing. It's sort of permanent.
Discrimination is acting upon a prejudice that one holds, and action has taken place.
It doesn't have to be on a prejudice, because as you said before, prejudice means you don't know. You're choosing one over the other for, it could be for no reason, but it could be for good reason.
Right, and we do want to anchor this whole conversation along lines of social identity, right? We don't want to kind of go off into outer space around like being mean, right? This is not just, you know, well, so-and-so is mean, right? We are talking about from one person or group towards another person or group, right? And a harmful behavior happens, an action happens based on that person or that group's identity. More questions or thoughts or contributions on discrimination?
I
think we kind of talked about how discrimination can sometimes be intentional or unintentional. Like, you don't really know that what you're doing is discriminatory. Oppression, however, you know, usually know you're trying to keep somebody else hard or down or whatever. But sometimes you don't know what you're doing is discriminatory.
We do need to hold awareness around our biases and our prejudice to understand that our actions are rooted in them. Oppression is the trickiest one, so we'll get to that in just a second, but I just want to make space. Anybody at home, any other thoughts on discrimination?
We also highlighted that it was active, that some kind of action had to be taken.
That's great. That's great. Thank you. Is that Lisa, I think?
Yes.
Thanks. Oppression.
I see oppression as being the result or the consequence of discrimination and prejudice. You have your prejudging, we discriminate against that group, and then they're oppressed.
It could be like a cumulative thing, right? Like, there's just like, it's just happens so much that it becomes norm, and then it's like starting to be intertwined with our policies and our laws and our rules, our customs, our cultures. It becomes so much, right? It can be wrapped up in oppression that way.
Oppression is basically an expression of power. It depends entirely on power of one person or a group over another, which is backed by, you know, being better armed for conflict, having more means, weapons, things that we can use to oppress the other one and reduce them to the least dangerous in our mind.
Absolutely about power, right? And power is the ability to define a situation, to control a situation, that's power. Having that ability to define.
Something that has come up several times when the word privilege is dealt with in our society. I grew up in a country where I was privileged over against Native Americans, Mexican Indians, so I'm a mestizo, I'm both. But I already in that society had privilege over the other.
This conversation does very easily blend with the conversations I know you've had on social identity and how within every facet of identity, there are dominant and marginalized groups. And so that I can hold privilege and dominance in one part of who I am, but not necessarily in another part of who I am. That is a wonderful, we could do a whole other. We would absolutely love to kind of explore and go deeper. I know we've talked about it, but we can really dig deeper into that conversation too, because that's part of it.
I would love that, because I feel nothing derails the conversation faster with my white friends than that word.
That's great. And one of the most common misconceptions is, you know, what you have. It's also privilege is what you don't have to deal with. Right? There's so much to it. So yes, that's a whole good conversation. Back to oppression, just because we do want to be clear on this, right? It is not, these actions do not happen in a vacuum, right? A harmful thing that happens between two folks or two groups, it is in the context of the United States. It's 2022. All of our history matters. All of our national conversation matter. Our social, our societal outcomes are all part of this, right? And so it is within a context. It's not in a vacuum. So when we start to look at, we start to use a power analysis, we look at power differentials, that's when we can start to see more clearly oppression. So the isms, if you're not sure what like oppression is, what is it? Anyone?
Racism.
Sexism.
Sexism? Heterosexism? Ableism? Ableism? Ageism? When an action, a discriminatory action takes place, and behind it is the full weight of society, all the laws, all of the history, all the norms, all the policies, all the rules, all the culture, when that is also accompanying that harmful behavior, that's oppression. We're talking about pressing down. Some questions. I have some eyebrows raised. This might take some time to marinate. It took me some time to start to really understand the difference between discrimination and oppression.
There are cases when you, as an individual, only have a choice between a benevolent oppressor and a destructive oppressor.
That's a wonderful parking lot too, because we have
the least of two evils.
Mm-hmm. So other questions on oppression. It's okay if we're like not quite sure right now on this word, but this is the word. Just like privilege sends us off the rails sometimes, we can also totally fall off around this word. We can lose it around this word.
I mean, I feel like, go ahead and then we'll go to. Yeah, so we were talking about being really like intentional. We talked about it being power, but as we're talking, I'm like, I can think of kind of some oppression, which I'm not sure was initially intentional, like mass incarceration. Like, I mean, I feel like that's just a very complicated thing, and it almost does feel like oppression now. I'm not sure that started, like where we started thinking about oppression and how it happened.
It's a manifestation of oppression for sure,
yeah.
Right? And that's why we use the term systems of oppression when we talk about systemic situations, right? So there's healthcare, there's education, there's housing. Certainly, mass incarceration would be one of many different systems that rolls out.
If you use the litmus test of the ism and you ask yourself, is this oppression? And you say, well, my litmus test is, what ism can I tie to it? Which ism can tie to mass incarceration? I can think of three.
On racism.
One. Two more.
Is sexism be one of them?
It's possible, yes. Two more.
Ableism.
Yep. Two more. Because capitalism and consumerism are huge aspects of mass incarceration.
Yeah.
And so if you can apply an ism to the structure, then that's a quick test of whether or not it's a threat.
What were the capitalism?
Capitalism and consumerism.
I want to make sure I thank you, Michelle.
I was just going to say that for some reason, oppression, When I hear that word, I think more of large groups of people automatically sort of than I do with prejudice and discrimination.
It's absolutely broad.
Large groups of people.
Right. And it's easy to take ourselves out of the system when we talk about like, systemic oppression, systemic racism. We're in it. We're a part of the system. We all are, right? But you're right that it is more all encompassing. And it goes beyond much more an individual interaction between two people. Absolutely.
I kind of disagree in a way.
Go.
Because it begins at home.
I'm sorry?
It begins at home. Early in my life, again, I was declared at times to be behaving very chauvinistic. In Spanish is machista. I came in the United States in 1963 to live here permanently. I couldn't find the word that translated that.
Right.
But it's the oppression of the male over the female.
And we, that happens. It can be both. You often talk about going up and down the ladder, right? Between the interpersonal, institutional, systemic, right? It's both. But these laws don't write themselves, right? The policies don't, you know, make themselves. The norms, right? Like office culture and office dress codes, those don't write themselves. People do it, right? We do it.
Yeah.
So it is, we cannot separate out the two. But I do think it is important to also name how broad that right. that term really does apply. Yes.
That's when it becomes evil.
Well,
yeah,
this is
very daunting.
Is it a little evil when only one person does it?
I think that what I wanted to say was kind of what I'm hearing from the room is it can be the air that we breathe and we don't even realize that we are a part of the oppression because it's just baked in. Our parents are teaching us it. We're learning it as we go into the corporate world, maybe, and like how things are done. People are writing rules for us and laws, and like we just follow them because you follow the law. That's why I feel like here.
These are all really great contributions. I do want to move on to our final conversation, but is there anybody else at home? Any other closing thoughts on this? Thank you for digging into them a little bit more, because as we move forward with our work here in our small groups, I know we're doing, you know, we have lots of different breakouts and things like that. It comes up. These ideas and concepts do come up. Okay, we're going to pivot towards the end. This is we're going to set up next time. Do you want to just tell them real quick what we're going to do next time?
Yeah, so
we can talk about then we'll just
it is
talk about
you
why.
All just had small groups, and one of the things that I noted was that there was a lot of racial and ethnic diversity on this side of the room, and then there were more males in the middle of the middle group, and then the group over here was all female, and I just wondered out loud how that impacted the conversation. We often have schools that are all boys or all girls, and I put that in air quotes because I do, and it changes the dynamics of how students learn. We know that. Research and statistics show us that, right? And so based on what we know about that and learning, which we talked about earlier, when we get together the next time, we're going to create what we refer to as affinity groups. And it will be a white group and a non-white group because we know that that changes the way that the discourse unfolds. So before I go any further, before Dot goes any further, I'm wondering what your questions might be about that. Any questions come to the top of mind for you?
So tell me, how are you gonna, so you're gonna divide us up next time?
We're gonna put you in groups like we did today, and those groups will be created intentionally based on the affinity of whiteness and non-whiteness.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Anybody been part of a gender affinity group? Else? Any girls' nights out? I don't know, girls' trips, men's groups, men's fitness groups, not like study Bible studies.
I only have sisters, so
you've been in your whole life.
Prayer groups. There's, you know, groups for folks who are gender fluid and non-binary. Anybody has ever been spent time in an affinity space? It doesn't have to be like a actual group, just like have you ever
formal group?
Yes. Have you ever been in an affinity space along lines of gender?
Yeah.
Right. Right. We do these things all the time. Right. Yeah. What are some of them? What are some things that some times that you have spent in affinity spaces along lines of gender?
Sports.
Okay.
Army.
That one?
Army.
Oh, right. Maybe it's a little bit different, but you know, lot, even that, yeah, you can share
it. It was all good.
Book club?
work resource group?
Large and small corporations are frequently starting to really use, it's becoming more and more normalized to offer ERGs, employee resource groups, employee working groups, right? What might some of those be? For across all facets of social identity.
There's women.
Oh, women in tech. All right.
Yeah. There's Black. There's young professionals for like young people getting started.
Right. Exactly. A LGBTQIA plus affinity group within a Black caucus. The U.S. Congress has a Black caucus. Mm-hmm. Right. These caucuses and these affinity group spaces. Dominican has several. Where we stand. Right. So universities are using them. Why, let's start to kind of like dig into why this might be an effective tool in the toolbox for holding multiracial space. We're going to get back to multiracial and racial affinity groups. Why might this be a good idea? Why would we recommend, why would Rashida and myself think that for our next session, we'll do it that way?
Might be more willing to share with people that you think may hold your same views.
In these spaces, conversations are just different. In affinity spaces, we all know this to be true. The conversations are different. And that is a very key component, is the vulnerability that happens. The sharing that happens in those spaces is a lot more real. For some of us, like myself, I know as a white identifying person, maybe I'm less concerned with appearing to be a good white person. I really want to say the right thing and be one of the good ones. And I'm really consumed with that and thinking about what I'm going to say next. Maybe it's better if I can take it down a level and become more curious and vulnerable and open about exploring some things that I do need to explore within myself. Yeah.
So how does this giving affinity groups better thought compare with having all white male older lawyers as partners?
We're not that old. No, I'm kidding.
Let me hold on. I'm going to park in that lot for that for like 30 seconds.
I was going to say that one of the affiliated groups I was in with being in the partnership groups I was.
Well, that
we were all white males.
Right, but that's not an intentional affinity group.
You don't think so?
I think, well, you can say it to yourselves. I think it just kind of happened. It just so happened.
No.
But maybe not. Maybe I don't know about your particular group, but
what I'll share there is
So that's the difference. It just to be clear, is the intentionality.
It is the intentionality. It is also what the objective is. If the goal and objective is toward the preservation of power and resource versus the reconciliation of power and resource. If to that point, some of those groups have existed for 400 years, while others have never, in my vocational career as a corporate employee, I was never in a room where it was only Black women professionals, right? So that's exactly what the affinity group does, is it affords more equitable opportunities for common and shared space for people who traditionally and historically haven't had that innate opportunity to have it all the time.
And it provides the individuals with more of a sense of comfort. Mm-hmm.
It's an opportunity to carve out a brave space. It also mitigates harm. Why would I say that?
Say that again. Yep.
It mitigates harm.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Sometimes these conversations, while we are good intended, right? We assume best intentions. Sometimes when we are sharing out, we might not even be aware that we are actually harming in the process. As we, especially for folks who are white, are engaged in this learning, we are dredging the muck up from the bottom of the Mississippi, and it might not always
be very pretty, and we're working through it and we're holding space to do that. But sometimes that can be harmful as we wrestle with our own stuff in the process. But I want, yes, one more thing, but I wanted to talk about, I just wanted to kind of just take just a couple minutes too to talk about any like hesitations or concerns around it. Yeah.
I was just gonna say the formal ERG groups, they also are, they're pretty effective in getting change in an organization because they have a high level of sponsorship. And then you get, you know, an affinity group together, and then their voice is like what they'd like to see changed or what would work better. And there's definitely a channel for that to get to the right people. So I think I've seen some pretty passionate changes.
In a classroom of 20 students, let's just do third graders. They don't all need the exact same thing in the exact same way at the exact same time. And we would never question differentiating them and grouping them based on what their specific learning needs are. In fact, we advocate for that, again, for our learners. But we as adults go into learning environments and we want to know right away why things are being differentiated. And it's for the exact same reason that we offer it to any learner. Is that we're not all learning the exact same thing in the exact same way at the exact same time. So if we want the learning to be relevant, if we want it to be sustainable and enduring, we have to think about the what, the who, and the how, and that will be different based on who the learners are. That's the reason for affinity groups anywhere.
Okay. I'm looking forward to it. Any other, like, in terms of just speaking our discomfort and just interacting? Yeah. Any other discomfort around this? I think there's real possibility here for next time that we're both excited about.
Great. Well, thank you so much, you two.
You
should be
fine. Thank you. Thanks for both of mine.
So we briefly had a quorum to be able to make a motion, but we've lost our quorum. So we are back to not having a quorum. So we'll put the business stuff onto our Tuesday meeting.
Okay.
We can take care of that.
Do we want to still talk through the outcomes? People stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah. We just can't take any.
Yeah. Thank you again to Rashida and Dot. We'll move on. Just want to make sure I've got the right agenda here. So under unfinished business, we have subcommittee updates. So let's see. Is there one subcommittee that would like to do their update first? Go ahead.
I don't mean to be silly about this, but we only have two members, and as luck would have it, Renee was at the meeting with John and Lisa, and they discussed what was known in the book of knowledge. I wasn't there, so I can't tell you what was going on. And I'm here today, and she's not. And so that's kind of our report. We've moved forward, and we're still gathering the information we were looking for. We've come across an issue that we're not sure how to deal with that I pass along to Ken, and then I'm going to wait for an answer or discuss further.
Okay. Great. So you guys have a
what group is that?
That's the employment group.
Employment HR. Anyone else?
Okay. John. So purchasing. So yeah, I
I was, Farzad and I, and then the two from that group were able to hear some things from Lisa. And I made a bunch of notes on that. I could, you know, that's pretty much what we have. I could list some of those. Sure. I guess the main takeaway from that is that, the village is incorporating a lot of these now. Like is in terms of hiring, one thing Lisa mentioned is that sometimes they, what's the word for blackout? Redact. Names on, like, let's say, applications that the village is receiving for this position or that position, names, addresses, you know, anything that could be used to essentially apply your prejudice or your discrimination or something like that. So the village is doing some of those already. And I get the feeling that the staff is quite capable of, incorporating a lot of these DEI principles. One of the other things that was just good to keep in mind is that there are statutory guidelines for, lots of things that the village has some things that they can't change or some procedures that they're just following the law, that they have to do things a certain way. And then also, in terms of applying, like implementing a DEI program, they have to follow guidelines for that as well. Like, for example, accepting the lowest bid, things like that. So Lisa mentioned that staff has worked with other communities, including Oak Park, Elmwood Park, and has been and is part of lots of consortiums and for different things, purchasing health insurance or health benefits, other insurance, sort of ways to take on new employees. And then they've also researched sharing costs, such as street sweepers or police training or things like that. So a lot of some of the nuts and bolts, the village staff has done some of this already and will do more. And I my takeaway from it was that the way our committee could contribute is by looking at some of the bigger picture things, such as how other municipalities, whether they be, in Evanston or Wilmette or, across the country in Idaho somewhere or wherever, but how some of these things are happening all through the country, and then maybe we bring these ideas back and also not just with our input, let's say to the staff or to the trustees, but essentially into that document, the goals of the consultants. So lots of different ideas, basically, I think that we can help with.
So I hear is you all heard kind of the state of play of where the village is at right now, their willingness to push forward with new ideas, some things and regulations and partnerships that we have to keep in mind as we're doing this, and to bring in new ideas from across the country that other municipalities are achieving through DEI. That's great. Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you.
I was going to say also, I think that the way you're approaching it is dead on. You're always going to have, whenever you're talking to any group, hey, we're already doing some of these things, right? And then you're a new group and you kind of want to bring in some innovations. You're not trying to take over the group. You're not trying to change the entire group. And so you have to find a way to make that balance. I think you're doing a good job.
Thanks.
Now, I do have to share a little bit of a prejudice. That's the first time I ever thought I'd hear the word Idaho and best management practices for DEI coming out in the same sentence. So maybe they do. I don't know.
Erica got some really good ones on the flag from all over the country.
Yeah. Any other groups you want to start calling on people?
I'll do the RFP group.
Can you just speak a little louder?
Yep, I will. Thank you. So we had a what I would call a very productive meeting when we last got together in terms of how to proceed and next steps. I think we're on our way to preparing a pretty solid frame of an RFP. And once we have something in a presentable draft form, we will provide it for a review. But before we do that, one of the I think open questions that we had for the group, and I don't know if it makes sense to discuss now, or we also talked about providing language for an email that you could send out to people so that they could respond, is, you know, getting a sense from folks in the past, you know, year or so that people have been participating and in the small groups that you guys are working with now, what are some of the issues that you already have identified, and sort of having some of those to present and include in the RFP so that we can provide a more well-rounded way of getting sort of the information, feedback, and proposals that will actually be beneficial and useful for this group. But we want to make sure we don't do is have something that's generic and say, help us with diversity, and we would do an assessment, right? Like, we want them to help us with our diversity, equity, inclusion, and do an assessment of our village. So I think what we had sort of talked about is getting that information from you as you all are working through some of the things you're trying to do now and using that for the RFP. So I don't know if chairs your, would that be appropriate for us to give you some language email or how?
I think so. Maybe there's some language that you want to give. You can send it to the DEI chairs email. We'll send that out to the group and you can respond to that email, but also I think if you have ideas individually too, just know that that DEI email is there and you say pass it along to the RFP group, you know, like if you just think of something, right?
Yeah.
Go ahead and just send that to us and we'll make sure it gets. Next group. Thanks, Stacy.
I'll do the housing update. It'll be very brief. So we had a good turnout from our group. We had four of the five of us there live. So it was the first time we were able to meet face to face to kind of discuss goals and the purpose of our subcommittee. We pretty much decided as a group that housing could be a pretty large rabbit hole. So we decided to focus our efforts on affordable housing specifically in the village, affordable housing plan, and how that works within the overall comprehensive plan that the village approved a couple of years ago. One of the questions that came up from Mr. Navarro here was the metrics that are used in the affordable housing plan. It's all income based. And none of it is based on actual diversity or inclusion. So that's our big question is, where is the diversity and inclusion come in if every all of the policies and all of the guidance is based solely on it? So that's one of the questions that we will be looking into, as it goes. And for our next meetings coming up, we all agreed to kind of dig into the comprehensive plan a little bit and to create questions for ourselves or action points for ourselves.
That's wonderful. Great. Thank you.
For intergovernmental relations group,
Which group?
Intergovernmental relations.
Okay.
We created a list of cities around us, as well as government entities within River Forest that we want to reach out to. We finalized that list. We've kind of given each of us assignments of who to reach out to. And what we want to know is, what are their current DEI initiatives? And what resources might we be able to share? What do they have that we can share with this group? Or what is something that they would benefit from in our group to create something? And what have been their challenges? What have been their successes? And I think our biggest question is, as we draft these specific actual questions we want to ask, should that be approved by the whole DE&I committee? Should it just go to the chairs? How should we draft what questions we want to ask other villages and governments within?
I mean, it's a good question for all of us. I think you, as the working group, you know, you're digging into it. So I'm okay with the questions that you have. If you want input on questions other people may have, we can do the same thing as like the RFP group is doing, right? And so people, if you have any questions about what you want to, around DEI and other municipalities around us, share those with the chair email, and we can push them to you.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was going to say similar that, I thought it was a good idea when the first group said, okay, here's where we're at. For you would be, here's our list of questions that we came up with. Anybody got anything to say? Mm-hmm. Any questions? And then you move.
Okay.
Just so you could get the input, because you never know, they could come up with some questions and be like, oh, that's probably a good one too. And then secondly, with regard to other governments, not specifically Fan River Forest, we have a good contact. I know probably a good contact for her, because there's one that governs a lot of it, and they have meetings and things you might be interested in. So make sure you do that. So,
IML is the Illinois Municipal League.
Yeah. Great. Thanks so much, Trinidad. You gonna mention any of the work that you're doing?
Oh, yes. So another board trustee, Catherine Brennan, is working on a Juneteenth fundraiser celebration. We'll be down on June 13th. And if anybody wants to help with it, we're having a meeting at 8 a.m. tomorrow morning at Cribby Coffee in Forest Park. But we hope to plan something similar to what Forest Park did last year and what they're going to do this year. We have their planning person joining us tomorrow morning.
It's a really wonderful effort by Katie Brennan and a lot of municipalities coming together and just being really inclusive in this project of holding Juneteenth celebration. So. Kudos to you and everyone involved. Thank you so much. Anyone else? We have community outreach here tonight.
I'm the only one, but I wasn't at the meeting.
And maybe for those who are solo in the room, I think one of the things you might want to think of too is, I know when we have our meetings on the other days, right, when we're here at Dominican, you all put together those subcommittee minutes, and maybe just making sure that there are a couple of bullet points in there, because I think we post those in the agenda.
The subcommittee minutes?
Yeah.
Yep, they are.
I have them, but there wasn't anything new.
I hear you. Yeah. I hear you. Yeah.
Mostly we're deciding what are the resources that the community needs from the village.
Yeah.
And how do we provide that, and how do we determine what people need, and then from there, you know, how are we going to provide that? How are we going to make it accessible? That's great. So I'm going to, that's just, I was thinking out loud.
Yeah. There's going to be a lot of talking with all of this, right?
Yeah.
Governance and DEI framework. Anybody from that group?
No, Kim.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we will get there. You can see their updates then in the agenda, and if there's any additional color from them, we will throw out that.
Yep.
Are there any questions after any of these updates or things that anybody wants, just thinking through a little bit?
I had a suggestion. So what do you guys think about when we do have your small groups, we say, okay, who's going to do the presentation at the next meeting, so that we have somebody there appointed on behalf of your group, and then, you know, my opinion, we should, you know, sporadically decide who to do it, you know, not always be the same person, but that would probably help making sure that we have a report, because you as a group decided this is what we're going to present. Just my thought.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. And I don't want to make an assumption, but you all are finding the other day that we have the meeting and using that for your committees helpful and beneficial.
And you're welcome to meet outside of that other meeting too. And you're welcome to meet as you see fit. My only favor to ask is make sure that Elijah knows about it beforehand, 48 hours in advance, so that we can properly post it. And then as well, if you're going to meet somewhere other than at Village Hall, same thing, you have to post it at that location too. It's just one of those things we need to make sure we follow. So as you're, and I bring that up because we've had some groups that have asked about this question. So if you want to meet outside of that Tuesday, by all means, please do. Please let Elijah know at least 48 hours beforehand so we can have agendas published for the meeting.
Yeah.
And if it's remote, I forgot.
Same Zoom. Thing. If it's remote, let Elijah know, and we'll create a Zoom room for you so that it's through the village's Zoom connection, and then we'll comport with the.
Okay.
Yes. Yes, I know it's belt and suspenders, but you okay. know. Just want to make sure that we're keeping everything as close to oil as.
And it also sounds like I feel like I was getting feedback today, maybe from you and others, that like being in person, all the people here at that subcommittee is helpful and useful. So maybe as much as you can, joining in person for the meetings. So you can just, you know, everything's easier maybe a little bit. Anything else you want to go through? Do you want to go
through? No, all may we just kind of covered, so we're all good there. Statement of economic interests are due officially today. So hopefully you have completed it. We haven't checked yet to see what everybody's done. I know there were some questions that have come on in. Hopefully we've been able to answer them. You have to understand, as staff, we are in a very unenviable position because we can't give you any legal advice, right? We can only give you guidance as it's given to us. And so it puts us in kind of a bit of a trick bag. But I do appreciate those that have reached out and tried to get some answers. So please, if you haven't filled it out yet, let's get that filled out, because I really enjoy every single one of you on this group. And I don't want any of us to get in trouble.
Yeah.
go ahead.
So if we've completed those, do you, but we haven't gotten them to Elijah.
They don't go to Elijah. As soon as you complete it online, we never see it.
Are we supposed to be giving you something?
Just a confirmation that is the
confirmation really got it. Yes.
Oh, I did mine, but I didn't send anything to
Elijah.
I looked on the county website and we did.
Okay.
I couldn't remember whether I did mine, but if you try going in a second time, they tell you.
And that may just be for his benefit to remind people who have it.
So both of those things you or somebody has access to, so that even if we don't communicate with you, you can go in and say, oh yeah, these people completed statement of economic interest and what's the other thing we had to complete?
The Open Meetings Act.
The Open Meetings Act.
Yeah.
So you can see that we completed.
Yeah, I only see that you filed it.
Okay.
I don't see any other information.
Public record.
Yeah.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
We can't even move to
nope.
the meeting camp.
Don't have to.
I actually have a question. So it feels like every one of these meetings was really just squeaking by with enough people here. Is there something we can do to encourage attendance or like,
yeah.
Because I feel down the total.
Exactly. Yeah.
Definitely, something to think about. I would say just urge your subcommittee members, you now have like these small groups, right, that you're sort of building relationships with to come. You can let them know if you enjoyed tonight's education, part of it, how, helpful that was to you. And let people know how important it is to be here in person. And the sooner that we start getting and the sooner that people are here at 7 o'clock, the sooner we can go.
And to the question, we have had some resignations. So that's when I first started with this group, we needed 23 to start, or not down to 17 is what's needed to have an official meeting. So we have had some people who have realized they haven't been involved, have selected themselves out of the group. So in that regard, yes, it's been helpful, but really the whole idea behind the group as it was created, as I understand, was to, more is more, right? To have more voices being heard, more engaged people from the community in this whole process is more important than having less. So anyway,
I don't have a problem with more. We need engaged people showing up, right? We come and we can't transact.
You were all appointed, right? Like the process may have been easy, but it was a very official thing that happened. And we ask, I think maybe when you saw a statement of economic interest that sort of highlighted for some of us, right? We really are representative of our community. This is a really actually important thing that we need to attend. Each meeting for. We obviously recognize that things happen in people's lives, right? And so that, we're not looking to fault anybody, but, it was a responsibility that everybody signed up for. So,
will there be a time when Zoom is no longer an option?
It depends on the state of Illinois. So they have.
It's continued through May at this point. And through the end of May is what it is currently continued. But I don't disagree that having everybody together definitely brings a different energy, a very good energy. I think being able to break out in small groups the way that we did here in the room, no offense to our good friends that are still with us on Zoom, but being in a Zoom breakout room is not the same as being in a space together. So I agree more.
Other people who are here?
Yes. Well, and I would hazard a guess that those that remain on Zoom as well, if their opportunities were that they could be here tonight, they would be, right?
I can serve them here.
So,
Okay, with that, thank you everybody so much for your time and energy this evening. And I look forward to hearing more about the work that you all are doing.
The next meeting is.
Next meeting is the 17th.
Okay. Thank you guys. Have a good evening, everyone.